Lucky Luciano occupies a unique place among all of the legends of the United States gangster era. Like other mob bosses of his time, he was rich, influential, well-dressed, and sociable, and was of a powerful family. He was a brilliant thinker, like mob bosses in royalty, that was at best temporary. He brushed shoulders with politicians, socialites, and even another legend, Old Blue Eyes Frank Sinatra himself. However, it was not these qualities and achievements that made Lucky Luciano a cut above the rest, or the cream of the mafia crop. He held a distinction that no other mob boss had at the time. He was the true capo di tutti capi, the boss of all bosses and the head of the heads of New York and their most powerful crime families. By found mission, the ruling body were not even a head of a family in disobey. Lucky exerted influence over all of his other fellow mob bosses. Instead of exploiting his position only to advance his interest, he used it for more benevolent purposes. You know, the life of Lucky Luciano represented the archetypical life of a mobster of his heyday of the organized crime syndicates. He started as a rebellious child and found himself a member of the local neighborhood gang. From then, he slowly upped his game with more serious crimes. With his reputation, he became the interest of several mob bosses who trained and took him as a member of their own family. He had no trouble organizing the death of his boss. In fact, he was able to do it twice. At the end of his betrayals, Lucky became the head of his own family and the boss of all bosses in all but name. As the founder of the commission, he achieved a unique place among all other United States gangsters. At the height of his power, he influenced not only five of New York's most powerful families, but all other United States and other activities. Hey, join us today as we dive into the mafia history and explore fascinating life of Charles Lucky Luciano. Welcome to history. I'm Johnny Smith.
And I'm Dan Brady. Folks, welcome to episode 22, Lucky Luciano. Johnny, are you ready? I know you're excited.
I am super pumped for this episode.
Well, let's waste no time. Let's strap in, sit down, strap in, and let's dive into history. Today, we will talk about Lucky Luciano. Hi, folks. Welcome to episode 22, part one, Lucky Luciano. I am Dan Brady.
I'm Johnny Wicker 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 Smith.
Yep. So that's how this episode's going to go. Man, we got a good one today. I am very excited for it. Just because mafia history to me is so fascinating because so much of it is just built on blood. Like, one guy was in power, but maybe for a couple of weeks, you know, before someone takes him out and gets arrested, stuff like that.
To hell with all that noise. We're recording in person, folks. So get fucking ready.
And also, what I found fascinating is just doing a lot of research for this. How many people didn't believe the mob existed? Like, it's like the Holocaust, but with Italian people.
Yeah, man, it was like one of those things. It was almost like a conspiracy theory. Oh, the mob isn't real. It doesn't exist. But it's clearly real.
Well, it's also like because the FBI didn't pursue mobsters for a long time. They kind of turned this blind eye to it. And there's a myth out there that it's because the mafia had photos of J. Edgar Hoover in dress.
Yeah, I mean, that's believable. More stupid shit from the FBI, though, didn't categorize them or didn't pursue them as a criminal organization. Now, when you get debriefed in prison, though, they ask you if you're a member of certain gang organizations, and one of them is ICP. Are you a juggalo? So the FBI is fucking stupid no matter what.
So I know from the Al Capone episode, you love this kind of history. I know you know a good deal amount about Lucky Luciano, but I think I think you're probably about to learn more today.
Well, I'm excited, Dan. Looking forward to it.
All right. So Lucky Luciano was born on November 28th, 1897.
Now, was Lucky his given name?
No, it was Salvatore Lucania.
I love that name. Salvatore.
Salvatore.
Salvatore. This is my cousin Sal. Like, Salvatore sounds like an elegant Italian man. My cousin Sal sounds like a real fat piece of shit who won't move off his mom's couch.
He was the third among four children of Antonio and Rosalia Lucania.
Is that the proper pronunciation?
Probably not.
Can I see it? Where
are L-U-C-A-N-I-A. Right there.
All right. We're going to go with that then. Lucania.
Yeah, he's the third kid. Three of four. Again, they're born in Italy. Remember, he's an immigrant.
He's coming over to take our jobs.
In Italy, his dad was a miner and his mom was a housewife.
Well, sometimes they got married young, so if he was a minor, I get it.
Coming oh, in hot, my folks. God. Yeah.
He was mining for spaghetti meatballs.
So light racism. This is how we're going to start this episode out. I love it. Man.
Baby, what did you find in the mine today? Oh, I
found No. Oh, man. And we just got that listen in Italy, too.
Oh, yeah. So, shout out to you. Keep meatball mining. America needs its supply.
Oh, man. So, when Lucky was 10, young Salvatore, when he was 10, they moved to the United States. Or immigrated to the United States. And his family moved into the Lower East Side in New York. Where a bunch of other Italian immigrants were living.
That's right. Because, keep them all gathered up, rounded up in the same place. You know,
New York was basically divided based on the immigrant population.
I'm going to get a lot of flack for this episode, but you need to keep your eye on these Italians. I understand. Keep them in one place.
Oh, my God. So he was bored with school. And the lack of freedom, like from the educational system. So he dropped out at the age of 14.
Oh, that was early. Mm. That was early, man.
Remember Capone dropped out about this time too.
Yeah. I mean, that was a good time to drop out. I remember a lot of American settlers when they would drop out, they would finish eighth grade education. So that seemed like the status quo.
So he started doing his own thing. He was delivering hats. he was earning around $7 a week. But obviously, that ain't shit.
Yeah, that's not enough.
I mean, nowadays, that's not even like energy drink, a candy bar, and, you know.
Yeah, you can't get a pack of smokes and an energy drink for $7 these days.
Oh, man. Providing for the state. He wanted more money, and what was the best way to do this at this time period? Remember even from the Jack Kirby episode, every block had its own gang, and every like community had, you know, a bunch of these small gangs. So he joined one, the first group he joined, what they would do is they would protect Jewish kids. Basically, they would, because Jewish people were, again, center of hate at this time, and they were picked on.
If anybody gets hatred against the Jewish people, I get it. I understand. I don't know why, though. I was just starting to tell a joke there, but if I'm being honest, I don't know why the Jewish people have been persecuted,
right,
you know, for throughout history.
It's because they killed Christ.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly,
that's where a lot of people get their hate from.
Really?
That's where it really comes from.
Did they not realize, though, in that story, Christ had to die? Like, he was going to die for our sins? I don't know. But
we don't have time to go into why, you know, there's this underlying racism for Jewish people. I honestly, because I am not someone who has been persecuted like that, I can't tell you. I can tell you, though, Johnny, people fucking suck.
Yeah, they do. That's a good point. People suck.
So, and then he formed this gang, right?
Okay.
And most gangs engaged in petty crimes, gambling, stuff like that. Remember, like, Al Capone, he would just run stuff for other mafiosos and, you know, stuff like that.
That's how you get your start. You got to start somewhere.
But like I said, you know, there's kind of hatred on Jewish people. So he formed this business, this need for security. It was 10 cents a week. And if you didn't pay, you got beat up. So, you know, either pay us to not get beat up or you get beat up.
I like how they set up their own like business.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you need protection from what? From me, motherfucker.
Well, this is kind of showing. Lucky was smart. Lucky had a lot of, you know, he really changed the whole game in terms of organized crime. He put the organized in organized crime.
He did, but there's got to be different ways to rate people. Like Lucky Luciano, we'll talk about mafia organization. Great dude. Did he have any turtles? I don't think so. One up John. Fuck you, Lucky.
Okay.
Find the error in my train of thought there. Lucky didn't have any goddamn turtles that we know of. He has a bunch of unconfirmed turtles. You ain't shit, Lucky.
So he basically brutalizes quite a few prostitutes, gets them hooked on heroin. That's okay. But did he own a fucking turtle?
Yeah, man. See, that's the thing. A measure of a man is, can he take care of a turtle? It's like anybody can beat up Jewish dudes. Anybody can go give hookers heroin. I've done that on days I didn't even plan on doing it. So raising a turtle was a conscious decision. Look, that's the thing. Turtle fathers, we don't go out there and brutalize prostitutes. It's just not in our DNA.
Oh, man.
I have to set a good, reasonable example
for your
children.
Turtle kids, right?
Yeah. Every time you've seen it, when something goes down at an open mic, I just raise up the shell. I'm like, this is what you do, fellas. We're protected. We're good to go.
I mean, it's only a matter of time before they get, you know, nuclear radiation and become Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
All right. Now we veered off because, Dan, my entire life I have waited either for.
I know.
I've had pet turtles for many years of my life. This is nothing new. Like, these turtles are new, but, like, they're nothing new in my life. And I've always waited for my situation, for someone to give me some type of powers. I don't care what I have to give up now. My origin story is getting crazier. My mom's dead. My fucking wife's dead. All this crazy shit. I'm waiting,
Johnny,
to wake up one day with fucking Spider-Man powers.
Johnny, we're going to talk about a more important origin story right here.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So during this time, Lucky met his best friend.
Okay.
Like, you're going to probably recognize this name.
Was it in Akron?
No.
Oh. And then that's the only best friend I care about.
Oh, that's me. No, Meyer Lansky.
Okay.
Who would become, he was really good with math.
And he was a Jewish fellow.
Yes. And just basically a financial genius. He's one of the reasons why that Lucky got to where he did. Because he surrounded himself with, okay, I'm not going to say Bugsy Siegel or Vito Genovese is a good person, but the mindset or the skills that they had in their toolbox benefited Lucky greatly.
I think this will benefit the episode. Look, guys, anybody that's been through pain and suffering, we don't support this. We don't support mob violence. For the context of these episodes, those people were good people to have around. Bugsy Siegel was a good dude to have in your corner if you're living this life.
Meyer Lansky was a mathematics genius. He was really good. Oh,
he was a regular,
like Johnny, our guest last week on Shop Talk.
Yeah, he was a regular Johnny Smith.
Oh yeah, great with money. Did really good at Lyft. Him and Lucky met at this time because Lucky said, give me your money, because as an adult, Mayer was only 5'4".
Yeah, he was a tiny guy.
He was a tiny guy. So, you know, Lucky went to him and said, hey, either pay me this or you're going to get beat up. And there's different accounts on who won.
Mm-hmm.
We'll say it's a tie for the sake of history. But Meyer impressed Lucky. And from that day on, he brought him in. And around this time, too, he also met Bugsy Siegel. Ben Siegel. So, like, even when he was trying to start getting into this mafia time, he was surrounding himself with good tools, we'll say.
Okay, that's a good way to put it.
So, and also at this time, Salvatore changed his name to Charles. He wanted it to not only reflect his current citizenship as an American, but he had a nickname that he wanted to get rid of.
Okay.
Sally.
Ah, yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Who wants to be called Sally?
Oh, yeah. Because for this, you know, he's not sure where his trajectory is going yet, but that's not a good name for somebody who's getting into a life of crime, right?
You know what, though? It is. It is, because, like, I get where he was coming from, short-sighted. But, like, when you're a guy that's as powerful and as tough as that, it doesn't matter what your fucking name is. And even if you have a derogatory nickname, they will usually never call it to your face.
And he also changed his last name to Luciano because the other one, I swear to God, was too difficult to pronounce by non-Italians.
You know what? High five, Dan. We both get a pass.
Yeah. I was waiting for that. Most attributes, again, the nickname Lucky wouldn't come later on, and we'll talk about that when that happens.
Okay.
But there's build up to it. Like, he was arrested over 25 times, but he only went to jail twice.
Right on.
You know, he was never murdered.
Yeah.
especially as, like, I watched this one documentary, which I highly recommend. It was made by A&E and or AMC, which one of the two that nobody watches, but they have good shows every once in a while. And it was an 8-part docuseries. And it's like they showed the cinematic world of the mobsters. And then they had, which, by the way, just because you star in a mafia movie doesn't give you the right to be on a panel for a show about the mafia.
Who was it?
There was quite a few. There was the fat guy from Sopranos.
Okay.
Not the main guy.
The guy who played Pussy.
Yes.
Okay.
And then a couple of guys who were in Goodfellas.
I actually watched that. And you know what? A lot of that, though, those guys that look like that, a lot of times they grew up in environments where they weren't involved.
I'm sure. They saw it. But it's...
And then, no. Hear me out. As an actor, because I'm starting to learn more about the craft.
Yeah.
Learn things from these individuals. So you almost, if your career has been mafia roles for 20 years, you know a lot about the mafia just from character
work. Yeah. It's just so weird to be like, here's a guy who wrote this book, blah, blah, blah. And then here's Ben who played Sally.
Who played Salvatore?
Yeah. And the one guy from Goodfellas, he's maybe in the movie for like 30 seconds. Like, you recognize his face, but then you're like, he wasn't in the whole fucking movie. What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. And I just want to reiterate, too, a lot of those movies came out in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and those actors were in their, you know, 40s, a lot of them. Those were a different time period. Like, we don't grow up seeing the mafia now as much, if any. But those guys, especially growing up in New York, New Jersey, they saw mafia firsthand. Right.
So, yeah. So we got Lucky kind of going into growing up in this path of crime.
Okay.
Because he wants money. I'm sure he wants to get out of where he was at.
Yeah.
So this guy, he joined the Five Points Gang. With his crew, Bugsy and you know, Lansky.
I think he missed a great opportunity as starting a landscaping company. But go on.
Lansky's landscaping. Oh my God. So this guy was moving into Lucky's neighborhood. He is a very, very feared man, Joe Mazzaria.
Okay.
And through this, Lucky meets another, you know, right-hand man, Frank Costello.
Okay.
Because when he met Lucky and his guys, he was 20. And he was basically, from what I was reading, was Frank became known as a gentleman gangster. He's one of the guys that would kill if he had to, but he fucking hated it. So he was in it for the money, the dames, the no sugar, you know, the booze.
I'm in it for the dames. I love
for
it.
Hey, I mean, time correct. Okay.
You got it.
You know, the nice suits, the, you know, the Al Capones, the, you know.
Yeah. They got to look pretty. You know, it was almost like before social media, they understood the importance of the way people viewed you.
Well, if they dress like an actual mobster, like what they portray, what they do, they dress like that, they'd be in jail instantly. See,
the funny thing is, too, from them doing that, in my mind, the traditional mafia uniform is like a finely tailored suit now.
And the big hat. You know, if it's winter, the fur shawl.
Scarf and everything. Yep.
And that's how they dressed. So around 1920, you remember what happened?
Yeah, there was some shit.
Throwback to episode 9 here, when we took a look at Prohibition.
Yes.
So you got money coming up. You got, again, the law that outlawed booze.
By the way, I was thinking about this last night, actually. When Prohibition ended in 1933, that's when Hitler was elected to, like, chancellor or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's a correlation, but, you know.
So a new business opportunity presented itself to Lucky.
I think I just frustrated Dan more than I ever have before, because there's nowhere to go with that.
You know where there is somewhere to go? Bootlegging. That was the smuggling alcohol from other sources outside the United States. Nearby countries such as Canada, and even distant ones such as France and the Caribbean, were the sources of illegal alcohol that found itself in the homes, brothels, and bars at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he was given a small part of this through Joe Mazzaria.
So the mafia was anti-prohibition in their actions because they were providing alcohol.
Oh, they made a shit ton of money off of it. Yeah.
So they were pro-alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
I think the mafia is decent people because if you look at the other side, who was anti-alcohol?
The KKK, And for those of you going, the KKK, what? Episode 9, it's a two-parter. I think it's really like the turning point of where we started to kick these episodes out at top notch. And it's good. It's full of good information.
Yeah, man.
So he got this small operation from Joe Mazzaria. They weren't making much money. They're selling shit, alcohol. They weren't going anywhere. Because we haven't talked about this, but the mafia was race inclusive.
Yes.
Italians mess with Italians. Russians mess with Russians. So on and so forth.
That's why a Jewish person or a half-Jewish person could never be a made man.
I actually found out a lot about this. The Jewish people fucked people up.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that Jewish mafias were so like
see, because a lot of the Jewish mafia that we know in pop culture is people that are relayed as like the guys who weren't violent, who did like business stuff, like Ace off of what's that movie in Vegas.
Yeah,
you know, like they were a lot of times portrayed as like the brains, but some of these guys were fucking brutal.
And Dutch Schultz, who we're going to talk about here in a little bit, you know. But they weren't allowed to be made men. So, like, it was Lucky was pushing, but where Lucky was going, he was bringing his crew with him.
You know, I actually did the research behind this and figured out why all that stemmed from and why they couldn't be made men. It was the cooking. You know, who the fuck wants a brisket? That's not true at all, guys, but it sounded right, didn't it?
I think you're thinking of brisk.
Brisket.
Is brisket Jewish, though?
Yeah. Corned beef brisket.
Corned beef is Irish.
Corned beef. So Irish are the only people that he, wow. We want to talk about racism. I think Dan needs some what is that?
So at this time he made a mistake. Him and his boys, they wanted power, they wanted notoriety. How do you do that?
You make a move. You make a big money play.
You make a money play. Their money play.
Sensitivity training was the word I was looking for when I trailed out, folks, but keep going, Dan.
Their play here was to steal somebody's shipment of alcohol.
Now, you're about to tell me they made a grave mistake, though.
Yes. You know where this is going. They made a oopsie. They made a raggy. So it was him, Meyer Lansky, Frank Costello, Vito Genovese, Bugsy Siegel, which also, do you know where the word Bugsy comes from? Because you see this nickname for a lot of mafia men.
Bugsy. Was it because he was paranoid?
Bugs, at the time, that meant the person was crazy.
Oh, so he would go off the handle and fuck with
him. Oh,
Bugsy.
He was one of the guys who found his living as a hitman, and he enjoyed it.
You know, in another life, I could have became a hitman.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, another life. Like, I'm too old and fat and out of shape now.
So.
That's really what stopped
me. So they went after one of the moonshine runs from what they thought, foreshadowing what they thought was a rival's moonshine run.
Okay.
So they take out the driver. Driver basically says, what are you doing? You're stealing from Joe Mazzaria.
Oh, no. Big mistake. Joe Mazzaria is the big dog.
Yes.
This is going to be punishable by death.
And Joe, he knew. So they basically put the hit out. They were hiding. So Lucky said, well, I'm going to go talk to him.
Yeah.
And what they put, well, Lucky gets the shit kicked out of him. And this is also where his nickname comes from, too. This is another part. He approached a mob boss who had a hit out on him and said, hey, we didn't know, sorry. But what they work for is Luciano was basically, I'll kill for you, daddy.
Mm.
So
anybody that knows me knows I love the direct approach. You know, so when I read that he did this, I was fascinated.
So Lucky's first hit is at the age of 25. His first kill is a man named Umberto Valentini, who was also a mobster hitman and had tried to kill Joe Mazzaria about a week before.
And his name was Umberto.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that name.
So basically,
off of that.
So like Bugsy coached him through it. They came up with this plan, all just for Lucky to just gun him down on the fucking street in broad daylight.
I love it.
But, you know, because of this,
some of us don't know how to gun someone down in the middle of the day in the street. Some of us only kill people over in fucking deserts and shit. Ooh. USA.
So he gets in good favor now with Joe Mazzaria. Joe Mazzaria owns him.
Yeah. So when he kills the guy for him, and you say Joe Mazzaria owns him, is it like an ownership? Is it more of a, okay, I see what he's capable of. He's part of my organization now.
Basically, it's I just ordered you to kill somebody. I have evidence against you. Or like just the fact that Lucky performed the hit at the word. Like, I have you now. So, you're under my control.
Okay, so... Because to me, like the way you're describing it, it's just like, okay, now you're mine, bitch. But it just doesn't feel right. It seems like, okay, he proved himself. He did what he said he was going to do. They're good for the, you know, the shit that happened before. Now they can progress on and he can start making a real name for himself.
But they couldn't make money under him because he was still stuck in this old traditional way of, you know, he was especially rough because he didn't trust anything non-Italian. He would bow out of lucrative deals if somebody involved in it was not Italian.
You know what? That's partially fair enough, though. Have you ever had Chinese spaghetti? I don't recommend it. Boom, coming in hot again, folks.
So about 1923, he catches another business venture from Joe Mazzaria, something that was just recently made illegal.
See, going back and forth in person is so much better because I know when to interrupt you. The voice isn't going to cut out. And by the way, Chinese spaghetti is just called lo mein, folks.
Get it together. Oh, man. Yeah, I can also hit you, too.
Yeah, definitely true.
So what do you think just was made illegal?
Alcohol?
No.
Heroin?
Yes. Because heroin used to be in everything. Like, we joke about how it used to be in Coke, but it was in healing ointments, headache powders. Like, they got the entire country hooked on heroin and went, oh, no.
That tickled me pink because that was legitimately a shot in the fucking dark. When you said, yeah, that surprised the fuck out of me.
No, so they started selling heroin. And they would sell it in, again, hat cases, like hat boxes. Yeah. And just, they would also sell a lot to hookers because hookers were reliable because they needed their fix. And they would also distribute it to everybody there. So they started making a lot of money. And at this time, Lucky gets pinched.
Okay. See, Hollywood has given the stereotype wrongfully that the mafia never dealt with drugs. They didn't
want to
deal with
drugs.
Well, they were knee deep in drugs.
Well, I think it was The Godfather where they say, like, oh, this disgusts me. We would never do this. No, they sold drugs throughout their entire Castro Nostra existence.
I'm not one to body shame, but speaking of The Godfather, you know what disgusts me? Marlon Brando. Yeah. So fuck that dude.
Hot takes today, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, fuck Marlon Brando.
So this, he was selling heroin and he got 6 months in jail.
I never understood the hype behind that fat motherfucker. Like, I felt he was lazy. I never appreciated his acting. Fuck him. And shout out to Richard Pryor, giving him to him in the poop shoot. So we're going with that, folks. Dan is not ready for the extra information I'm bringing to the episode today. That's right. Marlon Brando, Richard Pryor, Paul Mooney. I'm getting it in. Nothing wrong with that. I just like to see it come out. Maybe the world would have been more advanced if they wouldn't have been pussies and talked about it.
Johnny, I like to see it come out too.
Oh, now I am just blushed. And
all right. So let's get past this. Let's get past our story. Back to our story. So he's in jail for only 6 months for selling heroin.
Must be nice. He's because he was a white guy. Let's be honest.
So, you said Austin Sauce earlier. You need to shut the fuck up.
Hey, man, I got my stripes.
He uses this time to, like, what am I doing for me and my boys? Like, where are we going? And he starts to think about it, and he doesn't go back to Joe Mazzaria. Okay. He doesn't go to work directly for him, even though he served 6 months in prison and didn't rat out anybody. He could have been made.
Yeah, I mean, so he's good. You know, his name is good now.
But it's, you know, about him and his people. So he, Meyer Lansky, was kind of working with this guy named Arnold Rothstein.
Another Jewish fella, I'm assuming?
Another Jewish fella, excellent with money. This man is famous for putting in the fix of the 1919 World Series.
Oh, no.
He won $4 million.
Yeah, that's incredible. And that was 1919?
Yeah.
God damn, that's a decent amount of money.
So this is the guy that Lucky wants to learn from, which that's smart. Find somebody better than you, have them mentor you, right?
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
You've done it. I've done it.
By the way, that's equivalent to over $60 million.
Jesus Christ.
God damn, that was a hell of a hit.
But, you know, so Lucky approaches him, and Arnold decides to work with him on his what the fuck is it called? Moonshine running business or bootlegging business. Sorry.
I had some good, decent moonshiners. Don't despair their names.
And Lucky not only earns a lot, but he learns a lot. He learns, you know, if you want to, if you want to be viewed as a professional, you got to dress professional, yes. Baby. You got to act professional.
Yes.
You got to live professionally. That means nice nightclubs, booze, you know, all this. More importantly, he taught him what he was doing wrong when he was running alcohol before.
You got to do it for the gram. Dan, the first time I drank moonshine, I actually cried inadvertently just because, like, I wasn't aware of how strong it was. And I just drank a mason jar.
Yep.
And boy, oh boy, about 30 minutes after drinking, I'm just sitting there crying.
My first encounter with actual moonshine and not like the store-bought stuff was homemade apple pie. You can see the apples in there and, you know, it just tastes so good. And I got halfway through the mason jar and I went, why the fuck can't I feel my face?
Yeah, I had an uncle who used to make moonshine.
Nice. So, like, he developed a taste for the finer things in life.
Let's bring the episode down. You know what's up with him now?
He's dead. Ah, nice. So, Lucky changed his mindset. He didn't want small apartments. He wanted penthouses, you know. He wanted tailored outfits off the rack.
Yeah, I completely understand. Like, you see, that's why I live in a penthouse instead of essentially one-room prison cell.
No, you live exactly like Lucky. Like, he had a suite at the Waldorf Astoria. Regular visits to the tailor that provided Lucky's with fedoras, cashmere coats, handcrafted shoes, and silk.
My living situation is only slightly better than the people at Pelican Bay.
So by 1925, Luciano was grossing over $5 million a year. However, he was netting about $3 million in profits due to the cost of Jesus Christ. He bribed off everybody: police officers, detectives, police chiefs, police captains, police lieutenants, sergeants, state and federal judges, district attorneys, U.S. attorneys, mayors, assemblymen, councilmen, government officials, federal officials, city officials, federal agents, politicians, senators, governors, Congress, legislators, military officials. You might even have bribed Jesus Christ himself.
I heard he bribed the host too to go up early. But keep in mind, folks, that $3 million profit, don't say woe is him. That's still equivalent to about $45 million.
He imported Scotch whiskey from Scotland, rum from the Caribbean, and whiskey from Canada, because the biggest thing he was taught is what he was doing wrong before. Before, he was selling shit whiskey to shit businesses. Mm-hmm. And Arnold's like, no, you go to the top sellers and you sell the best.
Yes.
You give them the best and they pay you the best.
Just like what in the history? Boom, giving them the best. Wow.
That was fucking perfect.
That was a low point for my life.
Sorry, man. And he not only ran operations in New York, but Philadelphia as well.
Philadelphia, the dirty stepchild of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And Aries, our little cousin who's on heroin.
That's not wrong, man.
Redding is that weird cousin that no one really talks to. It's a weird religious dude.
So,
Harrisburg's your sister who graduated college first. Fuck her. Wheeling, West Virginia is the cousin you go party with when dad's out of town because you know you can score what? Heroin. Back to the story, Dan.
Oh, my God. Oh, thank you for giving me permission. So around this time, Arnold Rothstein had one weakness, and that was intense gambling.
Oh, man, tell me about it.
So there is a story where he was in one of these three-day-long binges of gambling, and he was with a bunch of made men, a bunch of men you don't cross, and he refused to pay it back.
Oh, no, you can't do that.
So on November 7th, or 2nd, 1928, a hitman shot and killed Rothstein over the gambling debt. With Rothstein's death, Luciano quickly pledged fealty again to Masseria.
Oh, man. I mean, that's how it happens, though. You gotta pay your debts.
He loses his father-like figure, and then he has to go back to where he was so unhappy. So using everything he learned, he climbed the ranks.
Man, I relate to these people so much, though, because that's exactly like when I lost my wife and had to go back to the crackheads.
So, Lucky.
By the way, one of them recently, and this is like 3 years ago, so it doesn't have anything to do with that. But one of them recently announced she was pregnant, so good for her. Shout out to you. I'm not going to drop your name, but you know who the fuck you are.
I doubt they listen to the podcast, but hey,
I doubt it too, but I gave you $40 and I gave you a 20-piece McNugget and large fries. So don't expect a shower gift.
We're going to see Lucky's.
Man, am I getting too personal today?
I'm just ignoring the fuck out of it. You were talking about your turtles?
Yeah. Well, she got a turtle head.
Your laugh sounds like the beginning to a county fire horn.
Can someone that's listening come in and pull the knife out of my back, please?
Oh my God, boo hoo, Johnny. Boo hoo.
Woe is me, Dan.
Oh man. So his mindset really changed under Arnold. He was also starting to notice other weaknesses in Masuria's business. He didn't have business skills. He wasn't expanding and making money like he could be expanding and making money. And Lucky discovered he wasn't alone. So he had his normal crew, but he also started surrounding himself with people that had the same opinions in this.
Okay.
It's like we're about to see this reversal of like old traditions versus new traditions. So he envisioned like this group of young mafia members who put away prejudices and became more inclusive. They were called the Young Turks, a brash but progressive set of individuals who dreamed of being free from the old traditions of that only bound that their old bosses were bound to. Virtually unknown at that time, but legends today, the Young Turks were composed of Tommy Lucchesi, Carlo Gambino, Joe Bonanno, and Vito Genovese, who is also a close friend of Luciano for a while now, too.
And those names will be familiar because they'll play a key role in the families.
Oh, yeah. 100%. They're the OGs of like the modern day mafia.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, they were two members of New York's powerful crime families. However, they only occupied middle tiered positions in organizations instead of traditional mob bosses that will give up profit and lucrative business relationships. The Young Turks wanted to recreate the crime families like back in Italy.
They wanted to restructure.
Yeah. So, you know, we're going to see this new this new mindset, and that's what the mob's going to become. So all these guys are really just kind of, because of their ideologies and stuff, they're kind of stuck mid-tier.
Okay.
And they know they're not making as much money as they could be.
Okay. So they want to advance. There's nothing wrong with that.
Side note, it was about this time, 1929, oh, he's trying to get up there, his turtle. You can do it, buddy. It was around this time that Lucky started a long-term relationship with a woman named Gay Orlova. She was a dancer.
Okay.
They were never married, and they never had kids. Lucky did want children, but he knew that any child of his will forever be associated with the criminal activities of the family.
Absolutely.
So Lucky came back at the wrong time.
Oh.
Because starting in 1928, you could, before we get into that, let's talk about this real quick. Great Depression hit in 1929.
I believe that's
correct. Yeah, 100%. October 24th, I think. Last week's episode, if you want to find out the real answer. So he reshaped his business. So Meyer Lansky kind of came up with this idea, but basically this is where loan sharking stems from. But you go to small businesses and you give them money from your personal stash because banks are giving out these loans, and you know, you collect however much on the penny and you know, make profit off of.
See, like the only thing with that, it sounds like a nice business proposition, but it's the other end of it when you have to use extreme violence if people won't pay.
So starting in this, hold on, let me back up.
Starting in
1928, there started to be this war was brewing. It became known as the Castellamarese War.
So this was like a street mob with their
rival family, the Marizanos.
Okay.
So Salvatore Marizano versus Joe Masseria. Salvatore had came from Italy because in Italy, Mussolini just took power and he was very tough on the mafia. So a lot of guys flew to the United States. So this guy wants his piece of the pizza pie, if you will.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, what? It's bad because I'm encroaching on your somewhat racist territory?
Wow. Wow. I love Italian Americans and I welcome you all to this great country.
Stop saying it. Italian. It's Italian.
You know, it's got to be a more individualistic idea. You know, you're never going to grow with the thoughts of the old country. That's why you have to be more about yourself. Be not you Italian, be Italian.
So this really, thank you for that. So this really started because Salvatore didn't want to pay money to Joe. Because if you were to work in New York, if you were to work in Masseria's territory, you had to pay something to
tribute.
Yeah, Masseria.
You know, you got to pay the boss's money. That's how everybody stays happy and fat.
So I've seen in a couple places that this war was 4 years, but it didn't really kick off until 1931. But you can see there's a lot of stuff going on. Shipments getting stolen, you know, mobsters dying in the streets.
It's almost like a storyline from The Sopranos. Go figure.
So basically, the war became more violent. Gunmen clashed on the streets in New York. According to Bonanno, in February 1930, Masseria supposedly ordered the death of Gaspar Milazzano, a Catamarese native who was the president of Detroit's chapter of Union Siciliana. Masseria has been reportedly humiliated by Milazzano's refusal to support him in a union dispute involving the Chicago outfit and Al Capone.
I want him dead. Kill him.
This should also be mentioned because he's a previous dive subject, that Al Capone, he wasn't favored by the people in New York. They weren't fans of him because everything he did was flashy.
Al Capone was a baller.
Not just that, but he was encouraging people to go after him. Like the big turning point of this whole thing was the St. Valentine's Day massacre, because that was such a brutal show of force that was made public.
So would you say he was the equivalent of Nicky Barnes appearing on what, Newsweek?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was
just put it out there in their faces.
Yeah, just you know, like, hey, look at me. And that was like one of those mafia codes. You don't bring attention to yourself and you don't bring attention to your family.
Yeah, I actually support that code.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, mafia guys would be like, well, we're either going to kill you or you have to turn yourself in.
Yeah.
So
Al Capone wasn't with that bullshit, though.
No.
He said, I'm going to go crazy and die in my old age, you motherfuckers.
The opening salvo in the war was fired when the Masseria faction, went on February 26, 1930. Masseria ordered the murder of an ally, Gattino Reina. Masseria gave the job to a young Genovese who killed him with a shotgun. Masseria's intent was to protect his secret allies, Tommy Gagliano, Tommy Lucchesi, and Dominic the Gap Petrelli. What the fuck, the Gap? I really hope they're talking about his teeth. Yeah, yes.
That's what I would assume.
His gaping butthole will swallow you whole. Later, his treachery, all the shit you've said on this episode so far, and that's where you're like, what the fuck?
I was praying you weren't going to go to gaping.
You prude. You prude asshole.
I'd rather be prude than gaping.
So would he. Masaria. Yeah, so as Count Morisi born members of Niccolo Sciro's gang began to threaten Masaria's domination over Mafia games, Masaria forced Sciro to pay him $10,000 and step down as a boss of the gang on July 15th, 1930. Another man, Bonaventure, was gunned down outside of his garage.
See, people are just following them.
Yeah, man, it's this brutal full-scale war. And we can go on and on. This guy killed this guy, this warehouse. But it was very, very bad. And then I didn't get a year on this, but I can tell you that it happened. Marizano wanted to strike Masaria.
Okay.
You go for his most valued lieutenant, right?
I guess so.
So they kidnapped Lucky Luciano.
Oh.
And they tortured him for 8 hours. They stabbed him. Ugh. They ripped them, you know, they beat the shit out of him. Yeah. And this is where he gets his nickname. Cut in the throat, stabbed in the stomach, left in the middle of nowhere for no one to find him. He lives.
Yeah.
And my Mayor Lansky is like, wow, you're lucky. Lucky?
Yeah. Okay.
So.
So they essentially tried to murder.
Yeah. So about this time, Luciano and Genovese and his other guys started talking like, hey, something needs to happen here. So Luciano goes to Marizano and goes, hey, this needs to fucking end.
Yeah.
And he says, this no one person controls all. We get divided into families.
No more boss of bosses.
Right. So basically, Luciano goes, I'll kill him for you. And what happens is, again, disputed.
So Luciano said he would kill who?
Masaria.
His boss.
His boss.
Okay. That's big words. Oh, yeah. I mean, but that's one way to extend an olive branch to a man who's trying to murder your team.
So Masaria was killed at Nuovo Villa Tomorrow.
Okay.
A restaurant in Coney Island.
Okay.
While they played cards, Luciano got up and excused himself to go to the bathroom. And about that time, good thing for Lucky decided to go to the bathroom because right after that, the gunmen Anastasia, okay. Genovese, John O'Donis, and Benjamin Bugsy Seal came in and shot Masaria up.
Okay.
But the New York Times ran this. After the police had been able to learn definitely what happened, Masaria was seated at a table playing cards with two or three unknown men. When he was fired upon from behind, he died from gunshot wounds to his head, back, and chest. Masaria's autopsy report showed that he died on an empty stomach. No witnesses came forward, though two or three men were observed leaving the restaurant and getting into a stolen car. So it's kind of saying what, you know, it's a little different, but...
You know, my question is, and you might not know the answer to this one, what relevance did it have that he had an empty stomach?
That he wasn't there eating lunch? Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like... That's just the autopsy.
Okay.
So with the death of Masaria, the war ended. Marizano organized the mafia in New York City using clear structure and hierarchy by dividing the main Italian gangs in New York into five families. Each family with a boss, underboss, capos, soldiers, and associates. While associates could come from any background, the higher ranks had to be made men. Were required in most eras to be full-blooded Italian Americans. Shortly after Masaria's death, Marizano announced that the five families would be led by Luciano, Joe Bonanno, Joseph Profasi, Vincent Manganano, and Thomas Gagliano. Mazzarino's rise as capo dei tutti capi was short-lived. Although Maranzano was slightly more forward-thinking than Mazzarino, Luciano had come to believe that Maranzano was even more greedy and hidebound than Mazzarino had been.
Okay. So he just killed him too?
Not yet.
But it's that, that's what he was
doing. Yes.
Like, that's a dangerous people to have working for you. If they're like, ah, I don't like this guy's leadership, we're just going to kill him.
So this is where we're going to leave off part one.
Okay.
We're going to start part two with a big bang.
Big bang.
So in this episode, we just kind of his rise in the mafia, kind of details of his childhood, stuff like that.
So
part two, more or less, is going to be about the Sicilian Knight of the Vespers, his takeover of power.
So part two is going to start with a big bang. Would you say it's big enough to almost call it a boom bop?
Fuck it. Let's boom bop it.
All right.
All right, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the episode. Hope you enjoyed. I really apologize for my co-host. I will put him in the bathroom for the next episode.
Hey, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, folks. Peace and love.
Peace and love, and buy some fucking shirts. It was a moonless night, I was 18 years old. My life was going nowhere. It was midnight at the railroad tracks, miles away from anywhere. I said my dark prayer. Didn't look quite how I figured. Green suit and black hair, smile on his face, ribbons on his chest. He seemed to walk on air. He promised to get me out of this town. I'd be handsome, wealthy, and brave. I'd travel the world, be powerful, but a slave until my grave. Now it's raining in the desert. Has it always gotta rain on me? I'm just another of the devil's dogs. Would they ever want with me? He grinned, I signed my name, diabolical back seal. Heard the cadence of an evil choir. Sand shifted, I fell into the pit. March with the other damned until I was one of them. But for every deal with Satan, we all face judgment, didn't we? I was sentenced to a floating prison. Devil's dog, lost out on the sea. I spent half my time sweating out of doors, running shit and running chores. I'm always in a dingy pit.
travels dark.